About a year ago, students from Lincoln High School, a school that so many of you are familiar with, it's just located diagonally across the street, came here to the sanctuary of Ner Tamid, and I had the opportunity to explain to those students some of the basic principles of Judaism, and what is it that we who are in this institution right across the street from where they're learning, what is it that we stand for? And actually, I described the Ner Tamid, the Aron Kodesh, I showed them the Torah scrolls, the Chumash and the Siddur that we use for our services, a Talit, Tefillin, and they had an opportunity to see, not only to hear, many of the items that we use to ultimately further what we stand for. But a few months ago, I was invited to speak at another high school. Not for the students to come here, but for me to go there. And actually, I could not bring the Ner Tamid and the Ark and Torah scroll. I thought, what can I bring that could capture the attention of these students and give me an opportunity to share with them what is some of the fundamental principles of Judaism? And so I had found in my office the shofar that sits on this little table, and with its stand, I brought it to the high school in the Inner Sunset. The students of the school gathered around, and I began to explain to them how this little ancient instrument is symbolic of much of what we stand for. I told them the story of today's Torah reading, the story of Abraham and Isaac, Akedat Yitzchak and the binding. And by mentioning Abraham, it gave me an opportunity to share with them what we consider one of our greatest gifts to humanity, and that is the concept of monotheism. And so in that little shofar, I was able to teach them the meaning of what it means to say that there is not many gods in the world, but one. And what that concept of oneness means. How it unites all the world, all humanity, all life, and all existence. And this is a basic principle that we stand for, symbolized by the patriarch Abraham, learned through the shofar. I tell them the story of the Akedah, of the binding of Yitzchak. And how at that moment, when a father's hand was stayed from slaying his son, a custom that must have been rampant in the ancient world, and instead, to hear the sound of a ram caught in a thicket, and to use the animal as a sacrifice rather than a human being. And the shofar became a symbol of our people's principle to realize that the taking of human blood for any cause is unacceptable. That human life is precious beyond measure. And that it was at that moment with that shofar that the Jewish people demanded an end to human sacrifice. And then finally, I used the shofar to tell them it was the first of the holidays in the Jewish calendar. I told them that Rosh Hashanah, and from that to Yom Kippur, and from that to Sukkot and Simchat Torah, and Chanukah and Pesach and Shavuot, and we went through the entire year. And they were fascinated by all of the rituals, and the objects they could only imagine, for the only one they saw was the shofar. I thought it was a good choice, because the shofar is truly a Jewish instrument. It's a Jewish object. It's something we connect to personally. Other than those who go to the zoo and see a ram, what opportunity do they ever have to see a shofar? And when they see it, they see something very Jewish. But as we were preparing for Rosh Hashanah this year, I asked myself if perhaps I had shortchanged those students. In telling them that the shofar is a symbol of what Judaism stands for, I think I myself may have missed the mark as to the universal significance of the shofar. Yes, it's true. We blow it at Rosh Hashanah, our holiday. But is the shofar restricted just to our people? After all, the Torah tells us that the shofar had to be blown at the Yovel, the Jubilee, when slaves would all be let free. There would be an end to debt and an attempt to restore society to a sense of equality, to bridge the gap between the haves and the have-nots. And then, that vision of eschatology, of a messianic era, when a shofar will be blown, indicating that the entire world would be free, that justice will reign not just amongst us, but for everyone. Isaiah's vision is realized with the sound of a universal shofar. And I think that there is a hint of this message in the theme prayer in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, Unesana Tokef, when there's a paragraph that begins, Uvashofar Gadol Yitaka. The great shofar is sounded on this day. What's the great shofar? Is it the little ram's horn? Or the antelope horn that David just sounded? Vashofar Gadol Yitaka V'Kol Dvama Dacha Yishama. When the great shofar is sounded, there is a still, small voice heard. And the sages say, what is that still, small voice? That is the voice of God heard in us. Just the Jews? No. In every human being. The shofar gadol, the great shofar, is not the Jewish shofar. It's a universal shofar. Listen to the words of the Rambam. Maimonides, one of the greatest Jewish philosophers and casuists, who shared with us not only the particulars and details, but also the meaning behind each of the 613 commandments, they wrote about the shofar. Its meaning is to cause us to awake from our slumber, to rouse ourselves from our lethargy, to scrutinize our deeds, to return in repentance. The sound of the shofar is to cause us to remember the divine creator of all, to remember you who forget eternal truths in the trifles of the hour, you who go astray after vain illusions, which neither profit nor deliver. The sound of the shofar demands that we examine the human soul, that we mend human ways and human actions. I, like you, listen to our Baal Tokeah, our shofar blower, and I marvel at how clear the sound is, how perfect the shofar sound. The long note, the shvarim, the broken in three, and the staccato notes. And I say to myself, oh, David is doing such a good job. I'm glad that we have a shofar blower like that in our synagogue. And then comes the Tekiah Gedolah, and we wonder, how long is it going to be? How long is his breath? How long can he hold out? And when he finishes, big smile on our faces. Ah, did a good job. But it's not a good job if that's what we're thinking of. The sound of the shofar, the Rambam tells us, is to fill us with trepidation. It's to fill us with a sense of awe. It's to go deep into our souls and to rouse us, to rethink our lives, to examine our actions. I suppose that when the last shofar sound is blown, instead of our smiling, what we should be doing is trembling. To stand in awe, because there is power in that sound that has lasted for these thousands of years. And a sound that we hope and pray will once be heard throughout the whole world. So I had a dream. Maybe because I felt that I had shortchanged those students at the high school, I began to think of what it would be if the sound of the shofar would indeed be heard, at least in our country. Not just in the synagogues, not just to Jews, but to everyone in the United States of America. It could happen. Look, Christians with their holiday in December have succeeded in permeating a mood for our entire country that even we Jews feel. It creates this atmosphere of joy in the world, of peace on earth, of gift giving. And so it's no accident that Hanukkah was revived 100 years ago. And today we have blue and white streamers decorating our homes, and Hanukkah cards made by Hallmark, and wrapped gifts that we give not to the children made of Hanukkah gilt, but watches and bracelets. And why? Because there is something truly powerful in the message of their holiday season that actually has meaning to everyone. Peace on earth and goodwill towards men and women. What does Rosh Hashanah, what does Yom Kippur, what do the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, the 10 days of our season, have to say to the entire country? So my dream is that once a year, somewhere around September, while Jews are blowing the shofar in their synagogues, the sound is heard through all America. And all America begins to have for 10 days an examination of their deeds, a rethinking of our values. That not just we as Jews talk about, did we keep kosher enough, did we be in shul enough, etc., but that the whole country is involved in the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, in a re-examination of its behavior. That once a year, America looks back and says, how have we been doing? Very different from the mood in December. Not necessarily saying that one is more important than the other. But perhaps the joy at the end of the calendar year needs to be balanced by some self-examination at this part of the year. That before America moves into its holiday season, perhaps America needs to first undergo the trembling, the sense of awe, and the asking of the hard and difficult questions of this season. And I think that if we would ask those questions, not as Jews but as Americans, they would be even more difficult than the questions in our Maxwell. A book was just published. I didn't get a chance, I don't know, to read it, even to acquire it. But I heard the author interviewed, and is considered, despite his youth, one of the foremost economists in the country. And the book, I believe, is entitled Unraveling America, in which he is suggesting that we're heading in a direction that unravels the very foundations and values for which we stand: freedom and democracy and opportunity for all. How is it that we're able to pass, and soon will pass, a resolution providing $87 billion more for the reconstruction of Iraq, a country that we were told will be able to support its own reconstruction from its oil reserves. And knowing that this $87 billion is just another installment, it's not the final tab. And yet, we don't have the money for universal health care in this country. I can't understand it. I can't understand how there are people on the streets with cardboard signs in the richest country in the world. How there are so many families and so many children living under the poverty line. Some families who lost their homes in the change in the economy are living under the freeways. We don't see them because we only drive above. How is it that we have unemployment, not just when we want to boost the economy? How is it that we have less and less affordable housing in this country? How is it that in order to try to keep the government going, we're reducing the social welfare programs for people? That we're removing what we do for those who are sick and lame and blind, for those who are mentally ill, for subsidies to hospitals. How is it that that's where we're deciding to cut? And at the same time, we're a government, we're an executive at Wall Street makes $140 million. What can he buy for $140 million that he doesn't already have? And we're a society that permits that. This is America, the land of opportunity. So, you have the opportunity to rip off the country. Take the opportunity. It's America. My friends, that's a sin. It's a sin of our country. It's a sin of these United States of America. And look how complacently we take it. Yes, the board of directors of Wall Street, the stock market, removed him from office. Who removed him from office? The people who voted that he should get $140 million. They give him the money and now embarrassed him for taking it. Where do you think the $87 million to rebuild Iraq is going to go? The Iraqis are not celebrating. Because the money is going to go into the pockets of Bechtel. And more and more and more companies that we own. And that we put from this pocket into that pocket. It's a sin. It's a sin that we live in the richest country in the world. And we refuse to share something of what we have with the 2 billion people on this planet, 2 billion people on this planet who live on less than $2 a day. It's a sin. It's a sin that we live in a country with such brilliant scientific minds that sit in laboratories and spend mega millions of dollars to create a cream to reverse baldness, or another pill to relieve a headache, and then charge so much for the cure of real diseases, even to countries who can't afford pennies. Millions of people will die this year from malnourishment, from AIDS, from diseases we don't even remember. And we're a country that could really make a difference. It's a sin. It's a sin when America has reached the greatest state of power of religion. Religion has never flourished in this country to the extent that it does now. Where churches flourish, where there is power by religious groups and government like never before, that there seems to be a clear attempt to erode the separation of church and state. The very foundation that enables religion to be strong, its separation from government, is being eroded by the people who have the religious power through the separation of church and state. It's a sin. It's a sin that America has lost its vision. The vision of being a leader in morals, in ethics, in standards and values for this country, for this world. And instead, we've accepted that we are the exporter of music that most of us can't understand, of clothing styles that most of us would be ashamed to wear. It's a sin. We consume goods that we don't need, and we throw away those that we've used once. We erode the rights of individuals because of the war in Iraq and our genuine and deserving fear of Islamic fundamentalism and extremism. But we're dismissing civil rights. And we Jews should know more than anyone else how a nation can suffer when the individual rights of smaller groups, minority groups, are taken away. America needs the sound of the shofar. America needs Aseret Yemei Teshuva. 10 days of self-examination. If we were to share the theme of these holy days with the world around us, we would not be trying to proselytize. We're not trying to convert anybody to make them Jews. What we want to do is share the essence, the theme of these holy days. The theme that as human beings, we know that we are far from our capacity, far from our potential, far from our ideals. And so we spend these 10 days trying to recapture those ideals, trying to reestablish those values, trying to recreate that dream. The shofar has three sounds. There's tekiya, which is a majestic sound. It's a sound of redemption. It's a sound of the world being great. But that's not the only sound we make. After we hear that first sound, that's a vision of what the world should be, we have the shvarim, from the word shever, broken. Three blasts. One tekiya, the dream, the long shofar blast, broken in three. It tells us that there is pain and suffering and hurt in our world. And that's followed by teruah. The violin may replicate the human voice in singing, but the teruah replicates the human voice in crying. Because after that shvarim, after those three short ones, after we realize the pain and the suffering and the hurt in this world, there is a cry. And only after we hear the cry of others is there then a tekiya again. Then comes that tekiya gedola. My friends, the way to bring about a messianic era is not to dismiss but to hear the cry of those in pain. It is not to be focused only on oneself and what I have and I deserve it and it's mine, but to know that there are broken notes in this world. Notes that can be rejoined if we only share some of what we have. This is not a Jewish problem. It's not a Jewish issue. It's an American issue. It comes with the responsibility of being the only superpower on this planet. And so, my friends, my dream is that next year we open the doors and the windows, and the sound of the shofar from pulpits like that of Ne'er Tamid and around this country is heard throughout the nation. For if we need a season of gift-giving and joy, we first need a season of self-examination, correction, and repentance.